Back into another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast. Apologies for the delay in the release of an episode. I had a hell of a week last week. My kids were sick and then I got sick and I didn't have a voice. And so we couldn't record and there was like, it was very limited windows to record. So apologies for that. We are back though for three episodes this week and we're going to dive into summer scouting and we are going to go by team. And so we are breaking down, going by postseason rankings. So obviously Ohio State first since they won the national titles. And we'll work down from there. So we're going to start out with Ohio State's offense today. But Dalton, welcome back into the podcast. Are you excited to talk about an Ohio State offense that is, on paper and based off of 2024 tape is pretty limited on 2026 NFL draft prospects?
You said that you had a hell of a week. We also had a hell of a week in the Miller household. You know, you were sick. My wife got laid off from her job of 9 years. So it's been an experience. Go join the Patreon, ladies and gentlemen. Daddy needs to make some money.
Feed Dalton's child.
Yeah. Give my child food. No, and obviously I have the football and the fitness stuff there. So if you're looking to watch tape or lose some inches off of the tape, hit me up. Anyways, the offense might be a little bit of a problem. However, here's the way that I look at things. Alabama, Georgia, like all of these, even Ohio State, all these dynastic teams, Oregon, they'll reload. They got young guys. They're bringing in five stars. So even though the older guys who we're watching from an NFL draft perspective right now might not be as talented as the Ohio State team in the past, for sure, last year, it's not even close. But these blue bloods always find a way to figure it out. And they figure it out through money and recruiting and really, really high level coaching. Now, say whatever you want about Ryan Day, but that offense is awesome structurally. And as we'll get to the defense is still incredibly talented. So I think overall, they'll probably be okay. National champions, probably not, but they have a bunch of talent still.
Yeah, and they still have Jeremiah Smith, which helps out a ton.
It sure does.
Sure does. But going through their depth chart of upperclassmen who we need to talk to about from an NFL draft perspective, we really only came up with four names of like either redshirt seniors, so they're out of eligibility, or they're good enough to consider a draft eligible prospect. And then we went a little bit deeper and like we watched some of the interior offensive linemen. We'll get in a little bit of that, but like they all have eligibility left. And based on 2024 tape, there's not a lot of reason to think they might come out unless they do take a leap. Cause at least a couple of those offensive linemen got thrown into the fire once Josh Simmons went down and Donovan Jackson had to kick out to left tackle and Seth McLaughlin went down. Although Carson Hensman started in 2023 for them and just kind of went back into the lineup. But, so a lot of them don't have a lot of starting experience, and that could come along with some starting experience. But I think, obviously, with Ohio State, the place to start is wide receiver. Like, Brian Hartline deserves all the credit in the world. It seems like every single year, there's a first-round wide receiver coming out of Columbus, Ohio. Could be the case again this year, but let's start the conversation with Carnell Tate.
I'm going to shut that down right now. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Not in my opinion.
Not yet. Yeah.
No. To me, and this is going to, this is probably going to sound rough, but he reminds me of kind of the opposite version of Jaden Higgins, where I think he's less explosive than Higgins is. But where Higgins was so smooth in and out of breaks, you know, in that like 45 to 135 degrees mm-hmm. where you couldn't really step on the brakes and come back to the ball. I kind of think Carnell Tate is kind of the opposite.
Yeah.
I think Tate reminds me a little bit more of, he's nowhere near DK Metcalf, and that's not what I'm saying here, but that Ole Miss offense, a little bit like Trey Harris, where you're doing a lot on the vertical plane and you have the breaks to come back for the ball. The problem is he's like 6'2", 6'3", 190. He's not 205. He's not 210.
Yeah. He's very, so if you see him on tape, his ankles and his calves are very...
He's thin. Under.
Yeah.
He's thin. It like build wise, and you kind of brought this up when you were first talking about him, a little bit about like CeeDee Lamb. And now, like, CeeDee Lamb is a lot thicker now as he's been in the NFL for a couple of years. He's actually built an impressive amount of mass on his frame. But the way that I look at Tate is kind of like the AJ Green ish or like T Higgin ish type of winners, where they're not going to separate from a ton of people and they're going to have to use their length and ability over the middle of the field. And I don't know if he has the detail. He definitely doesn't have the detail right now that I personally expect from a Brian Hartline wide receiver. And that for me, over everything physical, because he is still a pretty good athlete. He's still an Ohio State athlete. He is still 6'3", 195. And I think that vertically he has enough speed to threaten. He's just not the Brian Hartline receiver I'm used to watching. And that bothers me the most, because all of those guys, from Garrett Wilson to Chris Olave to Jeremiah Smith already, I mean, that's just God-given talent, really. But all of those guys... professional NFL wide receivers. Tate is not that yet. And if Brian Hartline isn't getting him there this year, will anybody?
Yeah. So there's a couple things with Tate. I do want to start there because I also wrote that in my note, that he doesn't seem like a Brian Hartline receiver. And I say that you brought up like his lack of refinement in his routes and things like that. I also saw it in not only how bad of a blocker he was,
effort. Like, I have that written down too.
Of his blocks are atrocious.
Awful.
Two, you can automatically tell what plays he's not at the progression, what plays he's not tagged in.
Mm-hmm. I'm so glad that you brought this up, because I literally have
100%
this.
100% tell that, like, what plays he is not tagged in. 100% from an effort standpoint. And so that stuff is... And there are, like... I'm going to throw it out there, but I don't mean it in terms of from an evaluation prospect, but I still graded his hands as really good. Like, there's some odd drops, not like concentration drops. And he's got like a really awesome catch radius. And I think he's pretty good in traffic, but like wide open. Like, why did you just drop that football? And he only had like five drops on the season or something like that. Three drops on the season or something like that. But it's like the situations of those three drops are like very bizarre. The Texas game for one was on a glance that he was wide open, should have scored. And so like, There's some things about him that make me like, how does this guy practice? One, but he sees the field on Saturdays and a lot. So they must like him a decent amount. But I do. Here's the other end of the pendulum with Carnell Tate. Like, you mentioned CeeDee Lamb, and I do think he's very much in the same kind of athlete as CeeDee Lamb. But he doesn't have anywhere near the refinement. Like, I think his ankles are loose as hell. I think he is fluid. I think he can sink his hips and he can throttle, and he's got all of the physical like movement tools. But he lacks suddenness at the top of routes where he needs suddenness. His eyes are awful. His stems are awful. Like, he doesn't sell his eyes at all.
The lack of nuance is why he can't get open.
He's stepping straight into the chest of defensive backs. He's not leveraging his routes at all. And so it's like, this is, there's a weird nuance here. So I hope that he picks it up, because I mean, he still went for like 750 yards as the wide receiver three, and like that lack of nuance in that offense. So like, the physical tools, the natural God-given ability is clearly there that he can, but like, there's like a definite need to lock in. There's a definite need to lock in with Carnell Tate. But again, his hands, his catch radius, unbelievable. That dude's making plays outside of his frame like crazy. I think his awareness around the boundary is phenomenal. When I first watched him like live and a little bit here and there, I was like, ah, man, I don't know if he can track the football. Going back and watching him, I don't have issues with how he tracks the football.
So
but
the
he
one...
also cannot play through contact off the line of scrimmage or at the top of routes. He gets rerouted like crazy.
Yeah. So my one issue with him when it comes to tracking, and it's an issue that I have with a lot of wide receivers, is locate the ball. Mm-hmm. If you got to get on your high horse, you're going to have to drop your head and go. Mm-hmm. And that's something that consistently on he got overthrown by a yard or two, where he's just tracking the ball the entire way through the air. You got to be able to gauge that a little bit better. Put your head down and get that extra mile an hour and be able to catch up to the football.
Yeah.
And that's something that a lot of wide receivers do. So that's a very high level thing to try to reacquire at that point. And uh-huh. I get it. You found the ball. You want to keep on it, but you have to get to the ball as well, which is an issue.
Biggest thing with tracking, and I saw it in the Oregon game, because he should have had a touchdown in the Oregon game. And I thought it was the Oregon. It might have been
corner of the end zone.
Corner of the end zone. Mm-hmm. On a sluggo, it's like, why are you not coming back out toward the pylon? Like, he came back out vertically, almost towards the safety. And it's like, get back out. But again, that could be more of a route like refinement nuance thing than it is tracking. Like, he just got out on the wrong angle, and then he's way too far away from the ball. Because I thought it was a great ball from Will Howard. I thought it was leveraged appropriately. That kind of stuff. But again, getting rerouted off the line of scrimmage, and then even some of his release packages is like, dude, you're taking too many steps trying to get off the line.
Yeah, it's not good.
So a lot of tightening up to do. The natural God-given abilities, not a burner, a strider, not a burner.
Yeah.
But like the God-given movement abilities are there. Like, again, very CeeDee Lamb-ish. But can you watch CeeDee Lamb tape and develop to become a more sudden mover the way that CeeDee Lamb is? A more refined, sudden mover the way that CeeDee is?
We've talked about him long enough.
We have. Let's move on to Max Clair. Dude,
we don't have enough time to talk about
it. I love Max Clair. Like, here's the thing.
I want to peel the curtain back real quick.
Yeah.
You said this. You texted me and you said, if Mason Taylor can go top 50, why can't Max Clair? And I 100% agree with you. 100% mm-hmm. agree with you. And now, obviously, it depends on the strength of the class overall and blah, 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 blah.
Tight end class.
But, well, not even just like a good tight end class, but like a good class overall to go top 50 as a tight end.
Yeah.
I'm going to put this out here. There. He might be the most aggressive attacker of the football coming back to the ball that I have seen. Wide receiver, tight end. That dude reaches out and plucks everything as close to the quarterback as he can. I mean, his hands are outstanding when it comes to attacking the ball. And he's doing a lot of coming back to the football in the Purdue offense.
Sure, dude. I got to throw this one out there. I always like to look at box scores like peripherally before I go into scouting a guy. Cause like, I want to see like, how did you do and if I'm watching a guy who's a pass catcher, I want to watch games where you're getting targets, right? Like, I don't want to waste my time, but I needed to see like Ohio State, Oregon, Penn State were like, he actually had a good game against Penn State, but Ohio State, Oregon, it's like, why aren't you producing? But I turned on the Oregon game and then it's almost immediate. Like, oh, this is why you're not producing. Like, he's open all over the Oregon tape. But I think it was a backup quarterback playing, and the dude was just running around like a chicken with his head cut off.
Well, it didn't help that nobody on the left side of that offensive line could block anybody.
No, that's true too. Yeah, but yeah, dude, Max Clair, he's got it. He's those movement skills where we talked about. Like Tate isn't.
It's Laporta-ish for you, right?
Very Laporta-ish.
Yeah.
I could get really aggressive here, and I'm not going to do it because I would be throwing something out there that would be slightly comparing him to a one of one tight end that I'm not going to do. But like his movement in space, his feel for green grass.
I know who you're talking about.
Feels a little Kelsey-ish. Like his feel for green grass in space, his movement skills, his ability to be in mind lock with the quarterback and find a way back to the quarterback.
He finds grass so well. And he can't block. So there's.
I disagree. I mean, he can't block. His effort and his technique is good.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
So that when I'm talking about a tight end, it's like, do I care if a tight end can block? 9 times out of 10, no. Do I care if a tight end can give an effort? 10 times out of 10, yes. Like, if you're drafting a tight end early, the way that we're talking about Max Clair, like, do I care if you can block? Not particularly. Like, look at the tight ends that have gone the first two rounds over the past few years. Like, Brock Bowers.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
Receiving. Do you think the Raiders could care if he could block or not? So that's kind of where I'm at.
Bowers can block.
He can. But that's like the comparison that I'm making. And it's like, but what I see with
Laporta,
Clair, like,
I mean, Laporta's not a blocker. They have Brock Wright for that.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very big tell when Brock Wright comes on the field at Detroit. But like, that's what I'm saying about Clair is like, I see the hands. They're consistently inside the legs. Those things, if they don't just keep driving, whether or not he's moving dirt or anything like that, he'll do his best to swivel his hips and scoop and at least put his body in the way of a rush lane to try to wall off. Like, he's doing the effort. He just doesn't.
Yeah, he'll get tossed. To be a good effort. He's going to get tossed out the curb, but he'll get in the way.
Yeah. Yeah. But
yeah, the play strength is not great. And that's something that I did want to bring up. I think that he has a little bit of like natural wiggle and vision after the catch. Mm-hmm. It just has no contact balance, man. Oh, like even again, with smaller defenders where I like very much expect at 235, 240 pounds for you to be able to like drag a 185 pound corner for a yard or two. And he just doesn't. He doesn't have great play strength.
No.
But there is a little bit of wiggle there. And like you said, you're right. You don't want to ever bring up Travis Kelce when you're talking about a tight end prospect. But when it comes to his ability to find green grass and to give the quarterback a target against zone coverage, against man coverage, being able to freestyle and be in the right position to reward that quarterback for creating, Max Clair does that at a very, very high level. And we haven't even talked about him as a route runner, which I think is fantastic. He is so good, even though he doesn't have great play strength, he is so good at using his frame to separate at the top of routes, which all tight ends need to do, because it doesn't matter if you are the greatest athlete in the world at tight end, unless you are Kyle Pitts, you're not naturally separating from corners. You're just not going to be athletic enough. That the agility difference is just going to be there. Anatomically, you can't do it. And so you have to be able to use your frame to do that. He does that without the OPI arm consistently. Mm-hmm. And so he's able to use that shoulder and shrugs and a little bit of elbow weight. Like, he is so nuanced when it comes to getting open just a little bit. And then the way that he attacks the football, he maximizes those throwing windows incredibly well. So he's a very, very nuanced pass catcher, and that's what you want to see from a tight end going into the NFL level for quick NFL success. Mm-hmm. On top of that, I think that he's a decently good athlete as well.
Oh, he's got vertical juice. Yeah. Yeah. Same in the, like, obviously not the same as Carnell Tate in terms of being an athlete, but like, he's an easy accelerator. He's a toe stepper for sure. And there is not a goddamn false step off that line of scrimmage. He is firing directly off that back foot, and he's eating up space, and he's stepping on toes like pretty immediately. Like, this is a top 50 player. Like, unless he goes really like bottoms out, like, and I don't see how that's possible after he produced at Purdue. Like, this is a top 50 player.
Yeah, the problem is historically Ohio State does not throw to tight ends.
I mean, the historically, sure. There
maybe this year will be different because of the talent. Like, usually there's two or three round one wide receivers on the field. Jeremiah Smith is still out there, but maybe. Like, I don't know if he'll have the volume. Not that it matters for tight end, because if he goes out, and that's the thing here. Like, if he goes out and he tests average and doesn't get a ton of targets, it doesn't matter how good he looks.
Yeah.
He's probably not going to go top 50, but even if he doesn't get the targets, but he tests well, then he could go top 50. And that's just kind of the way the tight end goes, because we know that there is an actual very strong correlation between athletic upside, explosiveness specifically, and the ability to be successful at tight end at the NFL level. So I'm really excited about him, man. But we should move on because we got more guys to talk about.
So let's move on to another transfer at Ohio State. And one that should draw some ire about why. And that is the Rice transfer left tackle, Ethan Onyanwa. Did you see anything more than a mid day three player?
No. Mid day three?
Like,
I don't even
five. I don't even know. Mid to late five.
My issues are tenfold with him. He is ox strong.
He is
dense. He's a guard. There's no way that dude's playing tackle. The problem is, I don't think he can play guard either. And the reason why I don't think he can play guard at a high level is because his spatial awareness is non-existent. It's not terrible. It's non-existent. Any sort of flash of color crossing his face and he's in the spin cycle. He's lost. He cannot process information quickly enough. He just flat out can't. And that's just the way it is. And maybe, like, I think that that's such an innate ability. And when we talk about like the S2 cognitive test and its importance, like that's kind of where it's important. Like, how quickly are you able to process what you're seeing and react to it? And he can't do it at all. He can't do it at all. There's no connection with the left guard there at Rice. There on games, like, he's completely lost. He's tripping over people's feet. And listen, he's a finisher. He's a road grader in the run game. When he gets his hands on you and his technique, which is off as well, but when he's technically and aligned as an athlete, you're going to the ground. He is a finisher. And I think that's what brings these teams in, because they're like, we can fix the rest of it. He's strong and he's got vertical juice.
Oh, he does.
I actually really like the way that he climbs to the second level. And I think that he's got pretty good accuracy at the second level as well.
Yeah.
But everything in pass pro is ugly.
He's
really, really struggles to cut off the arc. And there's no spatial awareness or a requisite mirroring ability from a lateral agility point of view, just even athletically.
Yeah.
That I look at and I'm like, yes, that is a left tackle for the Ohio State Buckeyes.
Yeah. And for how ox strong he is, and again, you mentioned the road grading stuff. He will, if he gets into you, he's gonna hip torque you. Like, he's just gonna do it. That's his go to. He's gonna bury you. But for how ox strong he is, he lacks any sort of substantial punch when he's striking in pass pro. And not only that, there is his grip strength.
Well, I think that that's partially a technique thing.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Because I see that with a lot of guys. And that could be a coach thing too, because his hands are really low, like really low as a pass protector. And again, like the same thing on the other side, because I always want to see what the other offensive tackle is doing. And it's similar. And that just might be a coach thing. It's not the way that I like to see guys coached. But it's that low two hand. Left or for him, right hand is trying to get into like the elbow, they're under the elbow pit or the armpit. And then the other one is going center chest, but like low towards the sternum or lower.
Yeah.
And everything is down there. So anybody, any defensive end or outside linebacker who is able to shoot through the chest and has a little bit of length, you're out leveraged immediately. And so in that instance, you can't be the aggressor as a pass protector. You have to be reactive and you have to be a catcher and because he has all of that ass, because he's 340 pounds, 360 pounds. He has the ass, but if you're consistently out leveraged, it doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm. So what's fascinating about that is the Rice's head coach last year is actually a Bill Callahan disciple. And he got fired from Rice. So, and he's now the Cleveland Browns offensive line coach. Mike Bloomgren is his name. And last year, the Browns called him when he was still the head coach of Rice because Bill Callahan left to go coach with his son in Tennessee. And Bill Callahan gave the Browns his referred him to, like, said, hey, this is the guy, go call him.
Run game guys sticking together.
Yeah. And so, but obviously he was still the head coach. He said, no, I'm good at Rice. He got fired. Now he's back. And the Browns moved on from their offensive line coach of the year. That's really interesting. Also goes to show recruiting goes quite a long way. So coaching only can take you so far too. But yeah, dude, I mean, some of the things that I like, though, like he has noticeable foot speed when he's like short setting. He gets starts to strain when he has to get wide, when he has to set wide. But there's noticeable foot speed. And the rumor in Columbus is that he's lost 30 pounds. So if he's down 30 pounds, which again, when we talk about especially summer scouting, but even sometimes into the spring and towards the draft, especially with these small school guys, the facilities and nutritional programs of Power 4 Blue Bloods versus that of Rice versus that of William and Mary that Charles Grant went to and got drafted in the third round at 295 pounds or whatever he was playing at William and Mary cannot be understated. So like you kind of have to consider that a little bit. And if that's true, then like, great. Maybe there is a little more bend in those knees. Now there's a little less thickness around that. Like, you know, so like, we'll see.
Yeah, that's something I didn't even bring up. His knees are stiff as a board.
Yeah. No redirectability at all. Yeah.
And the other thing I would like to bring up when you brought up William and Mary and that it's a lot easier to lose bad weight than it is to gain good weight. Mm-hmm. It's so much easier. And just because a guy goes from 365 and probably unhealthy, I mean, it's all unhealthy at that point. Being that large of a human being is not healthy for anybody. That's why you see so many guys lose 100 pounds when they retire. It's a lot easier to lose that 30 pounds than it is to gain 20 pounds of lean tissue. And so doing that, even though it's 30 pounds in 6 months, your body uses that for energy. He's not going to automatically lose all of that strength and power that he has. He's just mm-hmm. going to become a more efficient athlete.
Yeah.
His diet has probably improved, so he's going to have even better energy as well. Plus, Ohio State weight room, you're right. It's just going to be different. So hopefully we do see those improvements because he is a lot of fun to watch in the run game.
Mm-hmm. He is.
We're at 30 minutes already.
I know. Ooh. Do you want to stick with the offensive line and just briefly hit on those interior guys
and move on?
Okay. So technically all four, I guess, interior offensive linemen are draft eligible. The odds that any of Luke Montgomery, Carson Hinsman, Cibola, or Seerveld declare, probably pretty slim. Like they all, I mean, Cibola is a pretty established starter, and so is Hinsman, I guess. Although they transferred in somebody to bench him, but then that transfer got hurt and he had to come back.
Is Cibola, I don't think Cibola is an entrenched starter because he was coming in and out.
Yeah. So, here's like, they're all really like rotationally. I do like Luke Montgomery, and I will say that I think Luke Montgomery's got length, he's got tools.
Out of all of those guys, very he's limited. One.
He's very, very limited starting experience. And as the playoffs went along, and he played some pretty damn good defensive lines in the playoffs, too. Like, that's the one that I would keep an eye on.
Yeah, he got thrown into the fire. And I think, I mean, having to go through and play Oregon and play Texas and play Notre Dame, he got beat up a little bit. But he's got the talent. He's absolutely got the talent. Mm-hmm. Hinsman is a no from me, dog. Cibola, I think, is the worst of the two right guards that I watched because I was watching the Notre Dame game. That's the one that I started with. And he played the first quarter and then he was out. And I was like, oh, he must have got hurt. So I went back to the Texas game and I was watching him. And then all of a sudden he was out and this number 67 was in. And I was like, oh, keep it on. And I'll look him up and see what happens. And he's a redshirt sophomore. He's going to be a redshirt sophomore. So interior offensive lineman, redshirt sophomore. Mm-hmm. Even if he starts the entire season, almost surely not going to declare. But he's better. I'm pretty confident in that. I think he's the better of the two right guards. And I think that he should probably start. I don't know if he will, but I think that he is the better player out of the two. And I don't think rotating offensive linemen is a smart thing ever. So that's just the way that I feel. Can you teach him to play center? Can Hinsman lose his job again? Because if you can get Cervell, is it Cervell?
Cervell and Montgomery are both pretty decent athletes. Cibola is definitely a guard. Like that dude.
Yeah, Cibola is definitely a guard. If you can get Cervell snapping and playing center, you can talk me into that. Because he can move a little bit. And it's funny because there was that touchdown from the big one on the screen. And all three of those guys were out on the move. And I thought like Cibola was going to be the slow one. But it was Hinsman who was the one that was laboring the most. And Cibola's like got 25, 30 pounds on Hinsman. Mm-hmm. Hinsman just ain't got it. And he's got no anchor. And we can move on from the interior because we don't think any of those guys are going to declare. But
also worth mentioning that they did transfer in Philip Daniels from Minnesota as well, who's going to be starting at right tackle as well.
He's also sophomore as well, right?
Yeah. So like we're talking about guys who have eligibility left, who have very limited starting experience. Like that's why we only spent time on guys that legitimate NFL prospects for the most part, but that last one, then
talk about these guys for two more years,
right? We could spend a little time talking about Will Kaczmarek if we want to, because I think that dude, like, I love a good blocking tight end, but
I can't because I didn't watch him.
Yeah, well, but you'll watch the Marshall game and watch him single block Mike Green for
I know you've talked about that a million times.
The last one to really talk about here then is going to be CJ Donaldson, senior running back transfer for West Virginia.
Yeah.
6'2", 235. Pretty hefty fella. And he plays like a pretty hefty fella.
Yeah. He's a fullback. Yeah, like he's an H-back. There's no doubt about that. At the NFL level, he is not a running back. He doesn't have the juice for it. But funny enough, the Texas Tech game was kind of intriguing to me. Use checking and roll at fullback because he's got good hands. And he's actually legitimately a very good blocker, like a very good blocker. And I love that from a back. And it shouldn't be surprising because he was actually a tight end recruit originally. It's 6 foot two, 230 pounds. That's not all that surprising, but it shows in the way that he moves. Now, what I will say about him as a runner, and I think that you can use him as a fullback, as a runner as well, and kind of, you know, mix things up and get him some short yardage stuff, because I do think that his vision and drive, actually think he's got really good inside zone vision to pick up 2 yards. You know what I mean? It's not going to be much more than 2 yards, but that's what he can do for you as a runner, is pick up those dirty yards. He's never going to be a feature back. He's never going to be a back that is in a rotation at the NFL level, in my opinion. But he could very well be your starting fullback at the NFL level. And I think that that has value because he's legitimately a good blocker. And
Miami,
he can legitimately get out there and catch passes as well, from what I saw from the Texas Tech game. Now, he did a lot of pass protection early in the year and kind of got into that other role later in the year. The offense kind of opened up a little bit. Mm-hmm. And I actually like him in that role. And I think that if the NFL is getting bigger again offensively to counter the speed defensively, and these run games are starting to get more important, and they used him as a lead blocker quite a bit, and he can do it. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I do think that he has an NFL role. Don't look at him as a running back.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm right there with you. I don't know if I have anything else to add about a guy who's going to be rotational and see very limited carries, but
I just love guys who line up in the backfield and can block. So I talk about him.
Ohio State starting a redshirt freshman at quarterback, a true sophomore at running back.
And I mean, the importance of C.J. Donaldson could be incredible as a blocker, as a running back, because of what we talked about with the offensive line.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. And that's to say that, like, Ohio State might not have a lot of draft-eligible offensive talent. I mean, they might not have a lot of 2026 NFL draft offensive talent. Like, I'm looking at a lot of guys that are going to go back to school, unless they explode.
Yep.
That's pretty much all we got. Let's go through before we get out of here, and we could pretty much do this pretty easily because I'm pretty sure we did it based on how we talked with these guys. Let's based on grades, where we would rank these four guys. Let's scrap the rest of the interior guys and just go with the four main guys. So for me, I would give a second round grade to Max Clair. I would give a third round grade to Carnell Tate, fifth round grade to Onyemwa, and then probably a seventh to PFA on Donaldson.
Yeah, so I'm not going to put round grades on any of these guys, but I will rank them. It's Clair, Tate, Donaldson.
Ooh.
And then I can't. Yeah. I couldn't get his name.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, that's how much I didn't love
him. No, it's not great. It's not great.
Yeah. If I just had to think, because my grades are all numerical and I just haven't watched enough of these guys to plug them in. If I plugged it in, I would say that Clair would be probably a second rounder. I would say it's Tate probably a day two guy. Probably a day two guy, but Clair would definitely be like higher round two. And then the other guys would be day three guys solidly.
Yeah. Yep. Awesome. Well, we'll be back tomorrow and we'll be talking about Ohio State defense. And there are a lot of names to talk about on the defensive side of the ball.
We won't talk as long tonight.
Again, a lot of guys individually. Right. Again, a lot of guys that they were rotationally last year as well. They're going to be starting this year. So the reps are sporadic. But there are some fun ones as well, and an extremely grabby corner. So
always
we'll get through all of that as well. So, but that's it, Dalton. Anything else to add before we get out of here?
I love you guys.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. We'll be back tomorrow. This has been another episode of the Daft on Draft podcast.